Today is Thursday, October 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the world's longest reigning monarch is dead. After a long illness, the King of Thailand died at the age of 88 on Thursday.
King Bhumibol was influential not because he was involved with the politics directly, but because of his particular personal presence.
We will talk with VOA's Ron Corbin in Bangkok about it. Also ahead, you'll hear the latest developments in the U.S. political story, and a famous American singer has been chosen the winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature, all on today's International Edition. The world's longest reigning monarch is dead. The King of Thailand, Bhumibol Adulyadet, died at the age of 88 on Thursday. That according to the Bureau of the Royal Household. The king had been in poor health for a long time, primarily spending his final years in a Bangkok hospital. VOA's Ron Corbin joins us from Bangkok. Ron, the king was highly revered all through his country. At least that's what the reports are saying. Tell us something about his relationship with the Thai people.
The relationship was very strong with the Thai people, especially in the rural areas. When he came back to Bangkok and ascended the throne from the 1950, he took some time to find his way into the role of the king and His Majesty. And so what he did over a long period of time was to travel throughout the country and to villages and to meeting people, promoting development projects and programs. He was known as one who was with a science degree. He was very close to the people, especially in the early years of his reign.
What does his death do? I mean, he's been ill for a long time, so one would think that Thai authorities and all the mechanisms of the Thai royal family would have kind of plotted out what happens next. What do you hear is going on? What's the next step?
Well, the next step will be the decision on the heir, and at the moment, as far as we understand it, the heir apparent is his son, Prince Vajiralong Ergon. That seems to be the case. That's been reported for some time that the king recognized or designated his son as the heir apparent in 1972 when he invested him as a crown prince. And there doesn't seem to have been that much change from there. His sister, Princess Sirintorn, was also recognized with a similar title, and some people had believed that it may have been left to either the advisor to the king, the Privy Council, that may have made the final decision in regard to who would succeed.
How symbolic is being the king of Thailand? The government of Thailand has gone through some major changes, as we know, over the past few years, giving more and more power to the military. How involved and how influential is the king of Thailand?
King Bhumibol was influential not because he was involved with the politics directly, but because of his particular personal presence. Also, he was one that maintained a level of moral righteousness. He said when he ascended the throne back in 1950, that he said, we will reign with righteousness for the benefit and happiness of the Siamese people. And he's been a person that's been recognized by the Thais as having, high principles. So he's had a very special place in people's, hearts and minds for a long period of time.
So one would theorize then logically that the death of the king would not lead to any big changes as far as the Thai government is concerned.
Well, apparently the military government that took power in May 2014 there would be no change. One of the reasons that many say that the military took power then was to ensure that there was a smooth transition. People were even then aware of what was coming. The king was not in good health, and so their role in the military was always to be there to, you know, steady the country as it moves through this delicate phase.
VOA's Ron Corbin in Bangkok joining us on International Edition. Thanks so much, Ron. Also joining us on International Edition is Andrew Palshesky. We're talking social media and what is trending on the same. What's on top of the list today?
Well, news of the Thai king's death breaking on social media earlier today, and that was really the first place where people started to react to that. Of course, he had been in ill health for a while, but still a shock for many people around the world and a trending topic around the world, as well as in the U.S., a lot of people reacting to that as well. But also in the U.S., every day we talk about the U.S. election, and it seems like it can't get any stranger or break new territory. And
Stranger,
and then it does. It breaks new territory, and some of it very unfortunate territory. So allegations coming out against Donald Trump from a number of women that claim he sexually assaulted them, and then people responding to that on social media, Trump defenders with this hashtag, next fake Trump victim, saying that these women are faking their stories, trying to poke holes in those stories. So that's an unfortunate social media backlash. Then you have this other story where Eric Trump, Donald Trump's son, sent out a graphic of the electoral map in the U.S. and said, we're making momentum, except it was an electoral map depicting what the country would look like if only men voted. And that would be an overwhelming Trump victory. If only women voted, it would be an overwhelming Hillary Clinton victory. But sent out this map showing just what it would look like if men voted.
Well, there are more women than men, but I don't know how many are registered women versus men. I'm not sure that we could probably go get into that, and that might make an interesting piece.
Yeah, but he, you know, taking this interesting data and trying to spin it as something positive for the campaign resulted in a hashtag. Some people were using hashtag repeal the 19th. As in repeal the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, saying if you took women's right to vote away, then Donald Trump would win. So, like I said, it reaches new and unfortunate areas every day as we get closer. 26 days left, but who's counting? And then finally, I want to touch on a story we're going to hear about a little later in the show, and you teased at the top of the show, a U.S. musician winning the Nobel Prize for Literature. It's Bob Dylan for having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition, according to the Nobel Committee. Lots of fans of Dylan saying, well-deserved award. They couldn't think of anybody better to get the Nobel Prize for Literature. But at least one person I follow on Facebook said, really, this is the best we can come up with as a singer-songwriter? So many great books have been written, so much great literature, and we give it to a guy who writes songs. So he wasn't thrilled.
If you're a Dylan fan, his songs, the lyrics are literature.
Yeah,
and that's why he won.
But that is the overwhelming consensus, people saying that if any songwriter should win, it should absolutely be him.
Andrew Palshesky with social media, and you can reach him at APAL on Twitter and probably 30, 40 other ways, right?
Something like that, yeah.
All right, Andrew, thank you very much. This is International Edition. Our top stories today, the world's longest reigning monarch is dead, the King of Thailand, dead at 88. Nigerian officials say 21 of the Chibok girls kidnapped by the militant group Boko Haram in 2014 have been released. The Nobel Prize for Literature goes to American Bob Dylan. And more allegations emerging Wednesday involving Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and what multiple women described as incidents of groping or kissing them. And Trump is now responding to that. This is VOA. We We continue on International Edition with the political story. More allegations emerged yesterday involving Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and what multiple women described as incidents of groping or kissing them on an airplane inside Trump Tower in New York and at his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida. The Clinton campaign is facing more controversy stemming from thousands of hacked emails written by staffers and published by WikiLeaks. Well, what is happening with this is Trump telling supporters Wednesday and again telling them now that the emails show Clinton staffers viciously attacked Catholics and evangelicals, as well as saying that all of the reports of his possible dalliances are lies. Well, less than a month before Election Day, Republican Donald Trump is scrambling to recover momentum after that recent release of the damaging videotape, a steep drop in the polls, an increasingly bitter feud with party leaders. Well, despite his recent troubles, some of Trump's most loyal supporters continue to stand with him, as VOA national correspondent Jim Malone found during his recent trip to the state of West Virginia.
There's an old saying that home is where the heart is. For West Virginia coal miner Chris Rose, that also means staying loyal to Donald Trump.
He speaks his mind. He's not afraid to say what's on his mind. He's got gall.
The coal mining industry is crucial in West Virginia, and Rose decided long ago he wanted to be part of it.
Family members, just everybody works in the coal mine. I mean, it is a way of life. It is really a brotherhood.
But the coal mining industry has fallen on hard times in recent years. The miners blame government regulations, and many of them are enthusiastically embracing Donald Trump for president.
I always picked that one as my favorite.
Rose says he and his wife were disgusted by the recent Trump videotape that contained vulgar remarks about women.
I don't 100% agree with some of his rhetoric. He does need to learn to make it a little bit more presidential.
But Rose also says voters want change.
They're fed up with the Clintons. They're fed up with the Bushes. It's time to run an outsider, time to give someone else a chance.
Trump is also the focus of discussion on the campus of West Virginia University in Morgantown. But young Democrat activist Angel Mullen is not a fan.
Donald Trump, he kind of disgusts me, and I feel bad about saying that. But as a woman and a minority, I don't feel very comfortable with him. I don't feel comfortable him, you know, handling women's rights.
Fellow young Democrat Emma Harrison says she is inspired by Hillary Clinton.
Well, for me, I really want to run for office someday, and to have her break the ultimate glass ceiling of president, hopefully, that would just mean the world to me.
Known as the Mountain State, West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the country. And its aging and predominantly white population is looking to Trump as a savior, says expert Patrick Hickey.
Trump's message really resonates here because part of his message is the kind of global economy has left American workers behind. And I think nowhere is that felt more, or very few places is that felt more than in West Virginia.
West Virginia looks to be Trump country come Election Day, where voters appear ready to overlook his faults in hopes of bringing change to a proud state with an uncertain future. Jim Malone, VOA News, Morgantown, West Virginia.
This is VOA.
On November 8th, American voters will choose their next president. We'll provide you with the latest updates. Will it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Will third-party candidates like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein have an impact on the final outcome? What does that mean for Americans and the world? It's all here on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is International Edition. As we told you, legendary American musician Bob Dylan has won the 2016 Nobel Prize for Literature, the first songwriter to receive the award. Dylan is the first American to win the Nobel Literature Prize since Toni Morrison did it in 1992. VOA's Adam Phillips produced an audio portrait of Dylan in 2011. Here it is for you.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
That's Blowin' in the Wind, the anti-war anthem that after more than 50 live and studio albums continues to be Bob Dylan's most famous song.
Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly?
The man the world knows simply as Dylan was born Robert Allen Zimmerman to middle-class Jewish parents in Minnesota on May 24, 1941. As a teen, Dylan was an ardent fan of the blues, country music, and early rock and roll, which he played in his high school band, the Shadow Blasters. He especially idolized folk legend Woody Guthrie, heard here singing This Land Is Your Land.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest.
Folk musicians at the time mostly played songs from America's past. Dylan began to write his own music, such as his classic, The Times They Are A-Changin', from 1963.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
With this song, he became identified with the left-wing social movement of the time.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
But critic and social commentator Quill Marcus says that Dylan's songs often transcended their genre, expressing tension between the topical and the mythical, the ancient and the everyday.
And sometimes when that tension is held in perfect balance, you get work of just extraordinary, not just depth, not just beauty, not just allure, but uniqueness.
Dylan was an innovator in other ways.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to.
In Tambourine Man, his imagery became personal and inward-looking, an approach unheard of in pop music of the era. Michael Gray, who wrote the Bob Dylan Encyclopedia, says Dylan was one of the first songwriters to marry great poetry with the primal power of rock and roll.
So that after him, you were free to be as creative and as serious as you wished to be and as you were capable of being within popular music, that it could deal with all subjects, that it was no longer necessarily an intrinsic part of the form to be trivial or shallow.
Dylan went electric at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival, infuriating many of his folk admirers. He soon released Like a Rolling Stone, a confrontational song in free verse that some consider to be the greatest rock song of all time.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you...
When you listen to the young Bob Dylan, anything at all that he recorded, there's just an extraordinary combination of calm center of self, an absolute confidence that he needn't be hurried, that he needn't shout. At the same time, a completely biting, focused grip on whatever kind of material he was doing.
Critics agree that Dylan has always said exactly what he wanted to say in whatever musical style interested him. His many personas have included Dylan the rap pioneer,
Dylan the rap pioneer,
disillusion words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark, make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christ that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred.
Dylan the country singer.
Lay across my big breast, please.
And Dylan the outlaw.
How far you all going? Ruby asked us with a sigh. We're going all the way till the wheels fall off and burn.
But it was Dylan's born-again Christian phase in the late 1970s and early 1980s that many secular fans found difficult to accept.
You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Dylan himself has not publicly explained why his life and music have taken so many turns. But critic Grill Marcus believes that Dylan's mystery is part of the message.
I think that's what artists do. I think they tell us that there's more to life than we thought there was. And that means that you have to be able to continually surprise people. That's a way of not being put in a box.
For his efforts, Bob Dylan has received nearly every major award in American music. Who can say what Bob Dylan's life will take him next?
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You have been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. And thanks for joining us. Our thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Nick Ivanov. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There are mixed trends with regard to the state of religious freedom in Vietnam. The most significant difference between these trends, said U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom David Saperstein, is primarily between rural and urban areas. Religious groups still face onerous registration requirements in order to legally operate, and authorities continue to deny legal recognition to numerous groups. Over the last year, however, authorities have granted several religious groups national-level recognition. While traditionally wary of religious communities providing social services, recent government statements have supported such activities. For example, local authorities in Hanoi have partnered with evangelical house churches to provide drug rehabilitation services. While this trend is much more encouraging in the cities, many individuals in some rural and ethnic minority areas still face great challenges when seeking to exercise their freedom of religion, particularly those belonging to unregistered religious groups. Saperstein noted that local officials in many areas continue to harass, detain, and intimidate individuals gathering for worship at independent meeting points and refuse to provide many groups with legal registration. Ethnic minority groups in the Central Highlands region, often called Montagnards, are one such example. On a recent visit to the Central Highlands, Ambassador Saperstein noted that after his meetings, police detained some of the local religious leaders who had met with him. Such harassment is unacceptable, said Ambassador Saperstein. Despite these concerning incidents, the government of Vietnam has made progress in other areas. Notably, said Saperstein, there is a new law on religion and belief under consideration in Vietnam. Under current regulations, nearly all religious activities require advanced approval by the government. There are indications that some provisions in the new draft law move away from a restrictive approval-based system towards a notification-based system. Under this model, a religious group would simply notify government officials of a planned activity instead of being required to secure formal approval. Saperstein views this reform, if enacted, as an important step forward. The U.S. government will continue to encourage Vietnam to move its laws and practices in a direction that will ease restrictions upon individuals on account of their religious beliefs. Everyone should be entitled to religious freedom, no matter where they live.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.